This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run, and you're here with Lynn Roshan and Noel. It's 8:49 in the morning, Monday the 25th of January, and in 15 minutes or so, we're bringing you KLCI opening numbers as well as insights into global markets with Stephen Innes of Axie. But in the meantime, let's talk about the Malaysian economy and COVID-19. Because last week, the whole of Malaysia, except for Sarawak, was placed under the MCO until February 4th. However, as the number of daily new cases continues to rise in the four-digit realm, the possibility of an extension beyond that date cannot be discounted.
Yesterday, news outlets reported on an internal communication from the EU Malaysia Chamber of Commerce and Industry to its members warning of a likelihood that Putrajaya may impose a total economic shutdown after February 4th if the COVID-19 cases show no improvement. Eurocam has since come out to clarify that the government had not mentioned an immediate lockdown after the after February 4th and that the correspondence was an internal confidential communique to alert its members on the need to take serious action to curb the spread in their workplaces.
So joining us on the line for a reaction to the potential of a total economic lockdown is Carmelo Frelito, CEO of the Centre for Market Education. Carmelo, thanks so much for speaking with us today. Now, you're a vocal critic of the total lockdown strategy in curbing the pandemic. Why do you say that lockdowns are ineffective to stop the spread of COVID-19?
Hi, good morning. Let me start by quoting economist Thomas Sowell, that was used to say that in policymaking, there are no solutions, but only trade-offs. So when we discuss the possibility of the lockdown, the real point is, what do we gain with a certain policy and how much that target is going to cost us? When lockdowns were implemented at the beginning of the pandemic last year, everybody just follow one specific study from the Imperial College that was predicting a huge cost in terms of human lives without lockdowns. But now, after 1 year of research, we have a growing number of papers that testifies and shows how actually the outcome of lockdowns are at the very least controversial. In order to find a causal connection between lockdowns and curbing the spread of the virus, we should get, consistent results. But we don't have these consistent results all around the world. So we have very limited evidence from this perspective. But on the other side, we do know that lockdowns are extremely costly. So why should we push on a policy that has not proved really scientifically as effective, but instead is very costly in terms also of human life, when in a country like Malaysia, actually, if we go into the hard numbers, the survival rate of COVID-19 so far is 99.6%.
Now, Carmelo, I understand where you're coming from here, but end of the day, when we take, I know... On a global scale, maybe the evidence is a bit more tricky, but Malaysia did implement a lockdown last year and we did bring the flatten the curve at this point. I think the biggest concern here lies on the healthcare sector, right? Because end of the day, as our COVID-19 cases rise, there is an increasing burden on the healthcare sector. Hence why we are seeing these increased concerns over whether to put a lockdown or not. What are the alternatives if we don't do a circuit breaker measure like this?
First of all, I doubt that last year we flattened the curve because of the lockdown. You see, it seems from the numbers, yeah, I'm not a doctor, but simply from the numbers, that those countries that were very mildly affected in different regions 1 year ago are much heavily affected now. I look at Germany in Europe. Germany was praised last year because numbers were not high compared to countries like Italy or Spain. But now, after 1 year, they are experiencing the same figures that Italy and Spain were experiencing 1 year ago. And we have in Germany the same government, same measures, and so on. So it means that somehow, probably the virus was not that strong like it is now 1 year ago.
It's hard to say if the numbers were not brought down due to the various MCOs. I mean, it's very hard to say that, right? And we certainly saw a jump in the number again after the Sabah elections, and we've since not been able to bring it down to a level because the numbers were just too great.
Well, I think that blaming only the sub-elections is too simplistic. It may have played a role, but again, if we look at numbers worldwide, if we move a little bit beyond the example of Malaysia, we see that all the countries that were mildly affected 1 year ago are experiencing now a much stronger wave. So I'm not so confident. And on this, I can quote, if you want, a very long list of scientific studies. But coming to Roshan's question about what to do instead, I think that what we need now is better information, so better data analysis. In many countries, we have availability, in example, on the age composition of the people that are dying out of COVID, gender, and the presence of other illnesses. And this helps people to make a better risk assessment and therefore to make better decisions for their own lives. Because you see, we have evidences that, at least from other countries, that COVID is not touching the whole segments of the population in the same way. We can mentally divide the population into two big groups. We have the young and healthy that have a very high cost from the lockdown because they compared to the risk, because we know that young and healthy usually go through COVID with mild symptoms. And eventually, they are the ones that contribute to the national economy. And we have the elderly that are more sensitive and more at risk. So they have a higher risk and a lower cost from the lockdown. So we need somehow to balance the needs of these two big groups. And I think that the better way we have is to create more information and awareness and acting much faster than the way in which we are acting now, and eventually help to protect the one that are really vulnerable and needs to be protected. Because I think the real issue is not to minimize the number of infections. I mean, if you think about flu, we didn't cancel flu for our human horizon, but with vaccines and with treatment, we can minimize the number of people that die out of flu every year, which is around 600,000-700,000. So this is the real issue that I think we need to tackle.
So Carmelo, be that as it may, we are in an MCO right now, and there has been talk of the MCO being extended. What are your estimates of how another total lockdown might impact the Malaysian economy so soon after this soft version of MCO 2.0?
I think, and I said this just before, just after the budget was announced, that the current predictions on the GDP growth are pretty unrealistic. What I see more or less around the world is that after the big fall of last year, there has been a natural rebound after we reopened the economy. And what we may experience in the next couple or 2 or 3 years is more or less flat growth, because the economy cannot be restored overnight. Confidence cannot be restored overnight, and economic initiatives cannot be rebuilt overnight. And in particular, if you are going with a hiccup lockdown strategy, we are going to somehow to undermine the seeds of the recovery. So I think that if this is the strategy that Malaysia is going to implement, what we are going to see this year is more or less very flat growth, if not negative.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Carmelo. That was Dr. Carmelo Frelito, CEO of the Center for Market Education, giving us a bit of a perspective on how a further or stricter lockdown might impact Malaysia so soon after the multiple restrictions that we've seen so far.
Yes, I think he makes a pertinent point here. You know, there is no perfect solution, only trade-offs, and we can only make a good decision on what the trade-off is if we actually have better data, and I think that's definitely a strong case for that. And I would also argue, I think the government may need to now consider setting up an independent committee comprising of like scientists and various healthcare professionals to actually evaluate the decisions that are made by the government, right? I think at this point, we deserve to know what is really going on, who is most at risk, are there certain groups, and what are the numbers like?
Yeah, I think even before we get that, Noel, maybe they could just tell us the rationale behind the different things that they do, right? Just very simply, what are the benchmarks that lead to certain actions? Why are you doing this? Because end of the day, it hurts the economy, and there are vulnerable groups that are hurting even more. I mean, we've talked about this last year. It's lives versus livelihoods. Well, some people's livelihoods are their lives. Mm. And there are so many sectors being hit hard by this. And get the people involved in the decision making, make it more transparent, make it very clear why you're doing what you're doing based on the numbers. And maybe everyone gets on board with that.
Basically, the pandemic introduces a lot of uncertainty. So the government should maybe be doing more to alleviate what uncertainty they can at this point. Right now, 9 o'clock news bulletin coming up for you. And up next, KLCI opening numbers. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.